Welcome back to another episode of the You Are Just a Number podcast, a show that discusses leadership, teamwork, process improvement, and the passion people have for their work. Today's guest is Ian Heller, the Chief Strategy Officer for the Distribution Strategy Group. Ian began his career in the industry as a truck unloader and has since held many senior executive roles. For more information, please visit our website at youarejustanumber.com, all one word. I am your host, Jim Zella. So sit back, relax, and enjoy as Ian shares his knowledge and experience, particularly regarding AI. Everyone. Today's my guest is Ian Heller. He's the Chief Strategy Officer for the Distribution Strategy Group. So welcome aboard, Ian.
Hey, thanks, Jim. I'm happy to be here.
So why don't you tell our listeners how you got to where you are today?
Yeah, I tell you, when I was in college, I got a part-time job unloading trucks at a Granger branch. And 15 years later, I was the VP of marketing. And along the way, I finished up my long neglected bachelor's degree. I got an MBA at Northwestern, and I went on to do executive jobs like that for three other big publicly held distributors in different sectors. So I spent most of my life as a, you know, working for distributors in marketing and e-commerce and merchandising. And then about 4 years ago, I started Distribution Strategy Group with my business partner, and he's got a PhD in computer science. So he comes out of the tech sector, although he's been in distribution for like 15 years now. And I come out of distribution as an operating executive. And so here I am at the ripe old age of 60 as an entrepreneur.
Well, that's great. So what does your company do, really?
Yeah, so our slogan is thought leadership for wholesale change agents. So we do thought leadership around mostly technology, but also strategy, marketing, digital strategy. So we do a lot of white papers and webinars, and we do a live event called Applied AI for Distributors. We had the first ever AI event for distributors. Big live conference style event. We're doing it again in June, and we're going to announce a fall conference here shortly. We also have three analytics products that distributors buy on a subscription basis for Net Promoter Score, Employee Engagement Score, and Market Demand.
All in the distribution network.
Yeah, all under the banner Distribution Strategy Group. What we don't do very much consulting, actually. We do a lot of keynote speaking, so we like working with associations and buying groups, and we have good relationships with most of them.
Can you explain to me what you mean by what is thought leadership?
Yeah, it's arming people with the latest thinking around business strategy in every dimension, right? Whether that's HR, financial management, sales planning, marketing planning, digital planning, so that they can make smarter decisions than their competitors and outperform them.
Okay. And how is AI playing a role in distribution?
Yeah, it's huge. Actually, I just wrote a column on why AI can have a bigger impact in distribution than retail. And it's because distribution's similar to retail, but it's much more complex. The products are more complex. So are the transactions, the customer and account hierarchies and the pricing matrices. And so AI can help in everything from demand generation to account profitability to helping customers select products with configure price quote tools that are armed by AI, to managing working capital, accounts receivable, and inventory better than you could without AI, to managing your co-op support and your rebate support from your suppliers, and powering decisions on websites. I mean, the number of AI applications for distributors is really extraordinary.
So I look at, and again, I'm telling you my point of distribution, and I'm, and you're the guru, I'm not, okay? So I look at people, well, with distribution, somebody has to hold the product, right? And so, and nobody really want, everybody, I guess it's like, you know, it, I'm going to go back to years ago, 30 years ago, just-in-time inventory. Does that philosophy still hold true in distribution?
No, just-in-time's really a manufacturing requirement, right? So, you know, typically it means I need it just in time at my manufacturing facility so I don't have a bunch of inventory on the floor, which might get damaged or stolen or lost, or I have to pay carrying charges for. Distributors have to hold inventory. And I think distributors, I just wrote a white paper for a couple of electrical manufacturers called, I think it's called How Distributors Can Be More Important to Manufacturers. And I have a whole section on getting back to basics. And distributors have to hold inventory. They just have to. I mean, almost every distributor I've been around at some point in time goes, what if we built mini branches in remote locations? We get in a strip mall, a 1,500 square foot branch. What they're really trying to do is say, I don't want to invest in inventory. And distributors need to be really smart with inventory. I mean, you can go broke if you don't manage it well. But what one of the things that distributors do is they hold inventory. I mean, there's this whole set of value-added functions of a wholesale distributor that a guy named Lou Stern wrote about 50 years ago or 40 years ago. And it's, you know, inventory holding, bulk breaking, assortment convenience, market demand, technical support, sales coverage. I mean, one of the most important things is distributors hold inventory. And when they try to get out of the business of holding inventory, they generally cause more problems than they solve. And, you know, what happens is manufacturers are like, well, if you're not going to hold inventory, everything else you do is much less valuable to me. I think I'll sell direct. I mean, you know, so I think distributors have to hold inventory. They just have to do it in a really smart way. And it's not easy. I mean, when I was at Grainger many years ago, we used to have this saying that there are two kinds of inventory forecasts, wrong ones and lucky ones. And so, you know, that's a bit tongue in cheek, but it is hard to forecast inventory well. But new AI tools can make you a lot smarter and better at forecasting inventory, and you need to take advantage of those tools, but you can't get out of the inventory holding business and be a distributor, in my opinion.
But and who's paying for the, I guess, whatever in the inventory? Who's holding, when does the money transfer from payment to, from one person to another person? Whose inventory are they holding? Is it the supplier's inventory? Yeah, your distribution, and I get that. But I know, like in a lot of stores, I think it's even in Walmart, okay? And again, I might be making it too small, but I think the person that sells to Walmart, it's their inventory, and Walmart pays you by what sells.
Is yeah, that- there's, I don't know much about Walmart, but there is supposedly this consignment deal they have where the manufacturer, because they don't really buy from wholesalers, they buy from manufacturers, where the manufacturer owns, has to pay for the inventory holding and not Walmart. You know, but no one else is going to get away with it. I mean, Amazon does it because of their third-party fulfillment. So by default, they don't own the inventory because two-thirds of their sales come from third parties. But for just about everybody else, every other retailer and every other distributor, you're going to take title of that inventory and then you're going to resell it. And, so like, you know, there are exceptions. What's that?
So Grainger buys the inventory and they hold it.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's this term, there's this financial measurement called cash conversion cycle, which helps you understand how efficiently you're managing your cash and your inventory and your accounts receivables and your accounts payable. It puts it all together in one number. And you should know that number. You should manage it well. But for the most part, distributor inventory is the cost of carrying that inventory are paid by the distributor.
So that's very, very interesting. So we were talking, I guess another time you and I were talking, we were talking about how the market is doing and everything like that. And is it exploding, getting better? Is there more distributors? I mean, because everybody wants product. So it has to have grown the distribution network.
Yeah, I mean, depending on who you talk to, distribution is about an $8 trillion industry, which arguably makes it the largest industry in the United States. And that's just a U.S. measurement. So yeah, I mean, it's grown a lot. I think there are people encroaching on it, right? I mean, you know, Amazon Business supposedly, you know, estimates are they did $40 billion last year. Now there's Walmart Business, and we'll see where that goes. You've got manufacturers selling direct. You've got, you know, HVAC manufacturers who now own their own distribution networks. Carrier did it. Now Rheem's doing it, you know. So I think there are different permutations. But there's a lot of M&A activity in distribution. I mean, PE firms really like distributors because it's a very straightforward investment model, right? I take, you know, 10 distributors that on average do $10 million. Now I have a $100 million company. And even if I don't do anything to those companies, a $100 million company sells at a higher multiple than a $10 million company, so I can make money. Now, if I'm smart, I integrate them well, and I put some organic growth and some, you know, leverage my purchasing capabilities, boy, I can really, you know, make a lot of money in M&A with distribution. And there are often very good synergies between these firms, and a lot of distributors have very healthy cultures. I say distribution is the Ted Lasso of industries because there's so many kind of nice, earnest people in it. So, the industry's growing. There's a lot of M&A activity, and then you get a bunch of startups. But it's overall a very healthy sector with some external threats that it really hasn't faced before, like Amazon.
So, this world has become more, immediate gratification. Okay. And has that played a role with distribution too? I mean, I also see how did it affect the distribution network when they have all these, everything is, well, there's a shortage of this, there's a shortage of that. How does that affect the distribution network? Or even how does it affect the distribution network when, I guess, a lot of product too is coming from overseas, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of onshoring or reshoring going on, or nearshoring, right? Where manufacturing is being moved from, China to Mexico or the United States. And a lot of manufacturing is being moved out of China anyway, just because it's such a antagonistic relationship with the United States. So a lot of it's going to Vietnam and the Philippines.
To Mexico too, right?
Yeah, a lot of it's in Mexico. So, I mean, when we had these unprecedented supply chain shortages, it really put the spotlight on the fact that those 6 week long supply chain stretching across the Pacific Ocean, really made it hard to forecast properly and made it hard to ensure that you'd have the right amount of product for customers. Ultimately, I think these things are going to normalize, and there's not going to be as much nearshoring as people think, other than there'll be some, but some of it's going to be regulation driven. Okay. So the CHIPS Act, and, we're going to have a bunch of fab plants in the United States that we wouldn't have had if there wasn't federal regulation to promote building semiconductor fabs in the United States. All of those supply chain problems affected and still continue to affect distributors. Just when we seem to get past a lot of those epic shortages, and there's a reason that those shortages happened, right? But once we got past those epic shortages, well, suddenly the lake in the middle of the Panama Canal is running out of water. And so they can only put so many ships through at one time. And so now that's slowed down. Now you've got all these problems in the Suez Canal. And so it just feels like there's an endless number of supply chain problems. And you are less exposed to those if you manufacture domestically, but ultimately, end customers tend to chase price over all other concerns, and that will, I think, override a lot of this movement to reshore, in my opinion. I don't like that idea, but I think that's the truth.
Well, everything comes down almost to price. I mean, I think, sometimes it's price over quality too. So the global market, global distribution grew, but now it's like contracting a little bit, but it's only going to contract so far. Would you say that it's correct?
Yeah, I don't know if it really contracted. I think it just, you had a lot of, the distribution sector has been really healthy. So because even when you had shortages in one area, you boomed in others. And there were some really weird things that happened, like in COVID. Remember, the grocery stores didn't have any food, but the restaurants didn't have any customers and had lots of food, right? Well, that's because those two food supply chains are very different, right? I mean, the wholesalers that, most restaurants buy from food wholesalers. Most grocery stores are big chains that buy direct from manufacturers. And the two sell in completely different lot sizes, right? I mean, nobody goes and buys a 55-gallon drum of Frisco from their grocery store, but that's all restaurants buy, right? So you had these packaging unit problems, and so you really couldn't cross the chain. I know one food wholesaler, and they lost 70% of their sales in 1 month when the supply chain crisis hit. Can you imagine? They're still in business. They recovered. You know, meanwhile, the grocery stores were selling out of everything. So, you know, the way these supply chains are set up drove real differences in, you know, pain versus peak profits in different industries. And, you know, distribution was no different. So you had some distributors who were selling safety products, and they had a bunch of, you know, masks, you know, N95 masks and hand sanitizer. And boy, they were selling everything like hotcakes. And then you had other people who, you know, like the food wholesalers who were going out of business because all the restaurants were shut down.
So you think, though, now that's all happening, and you think, do you, I know you wrote the white paper how AI you're going to help, but do you, is AI really there right now? Because they're always working on the algorithms. I mean,
people have no idea. We are so early. We are so early. And I mean, what's different about AI versus every other technology is AI is the first technology that improves on its own. It literally learns and improves on its own. That's what distinguishes it from, you know, other advanced technologies, right? And so you have all these forces converging that are going to drive extraordinary development of AI. You've got this increasing capability in semiconductor performance, which, you know, which everybody thought was going to slow down, right? Now, then you're going to have quantum computers, which is going to be just this order of magnitude superior performance from traditional computers. Then you've got decreasing costs of storage. It's really, really cheap to store data compared to what it used to cost, and it continues to come down. You've got, you know, 5G networks, and they've got these 5G enhanced networks that are like 10 times faster and more than 4G. And now you've got, we're getting really better, a lot better at writing AI algorithms, and pretty, and now AI is writing its own code, right?
Oh, so AI is writing AI is improving their own algorithms.
Yeah. AI is now writing AI, right? So what you're going to see is, and so I have this big argument with my business partner about when you're going to see, you know, artificial general intelligence where, you know, it's truly outperforming humans. It already does in many ways, but when you can't distinguish it from a conscious human being, I think it's going to be by 2028. He thinks it's 10 years off. Yeah. He thinks it's 10 years off. I'm not an expert. That's just my sense of it, because I think the performance curve continues to increase. And I think it's thrilling and terrifying. And while I'm on the point, there's this meme that's going around on LinkedIn where it's a quote from somebody who says, AI is not going to take your job. A person using AI is going to take your job. And that is totally misleading, because a person using AI is going to take 10 jobs and 50 jobs and 100 jobs. And to think that AI is not going to create massive job dislocation is either naive or disingenuous. I mean, AI is going to displace tens of millions of jobs over the next decade in the U.S. Now, historically, technology has always created more jobs than it destroyed.
Right.
But they often pop up in different sectors, right? So you can't just take a bunch of coal miners and who live in West Virginia and move them to Colorado and California and put them at work in windmill plants and making solar panels, right?
Right.
And by the way, a lot of those jobs are overseas compared to coal mining, right?
Right.
So yeah, in net, it creates more jobs, but you got to survive the transition, right? I don't actually know if AI is going to do that. Will AI actually make more jobs than it consumes? I don't know. I don't think that's I don't think anybody knows yet. But these reassurances that AI is not going to take your job, man, ignore those people. It can take a whole bunch of jobs, and you need to prepare it for you and your career in terms of what you're going to do about it if it happens. And so I think these reassurances are very naive, or they're disingenuous.
Well, I think AI was really, they really started pushing more AI because, you know, the baby boomers are leaving the marketplace and they don't have enough workers anymore. And yeah, I think, and computers and AR, for lack of better things, for me, is going to take, first of all, it's going to take away the simple jobs. Okay. A lot of duplication. And I feel that AI will do that, and I think it's even going to go beyond that. But what I find very interesting is man created the computer. So the computer is no smarter than man. It's faster than man, but it's no smarter than man. But AI is going to change that concept, I believe. Do you believe that?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, ChatGPT 4.0 has already passed the MCAT for medical school and the LSAT for law school, and it's gotten very high scores.
ChatGPT has done that?
Yes.
No kidding.
Yeah.
It passed the test?
The MCAT and the LSAT.
MCAT? Wow, I did not know that. Because actually, a lot of times, there's some things we were doing and working on some courses, because my brother and I were working on some of the things for more in the world of prevention versus correction. And I think AI is going to go there. But we use ChatGPT a lot, okay?
Yeah.
And it's amazing what ChatGPT can do.
Well, they what I'm hearing is 5.0 is going to be mind-blowing.
And when is 5.0 coming out?
I'm not sure.
Wow.
But I don't think it's that far out. But yeah, I mean, and I think, you know, there's this new discipline called prompt engineering, which is knowing how to put questions in to get maximum benefit. And, you know, sometimes, I mean, a good prompt can be pages long, right? And at least paragraphs long, because we're sort of used to doing these Google type inquiries in ChatGPT. But I mean, if you really give it parameters and put in detailed prompts, it'll blow your mind what it can do for you. I was talking to a friend of mine yesterday, and he went to LinkedIn, downloaded his profile, fed it into ChatGPT, and said, "This is me. Start talking like me, and you know, start giving answers like me." And it changed. He told me, and I haven't checked this out. He told me it changed the nature of the answers that it gave, so it actually sounds more like his voice when he uses it to generate content.
Really?
Yes, we said, yeah.
Yeah. So AI is really going to change the world, and it's really going to change your distribution network.
Yeah. I mean, everything from, you know, I mean, there's this huge driver shortage right now, but what makes it worse is people are afraid to go into truck driving for fear that they won't have a job in 20 years when, you know, autonomous trucks are doing most of the driving. And, you know, then, I mean, but think about like a financial analyst. I mean, if you take a ChatGPT system and you overlay it over well-sorted data at a distributor, customer data, product data, hit years of transactions, and you start asking it questions, you know, or hey, make up a marketing campaign for me, looking for a 10% lift at, you know, this margin. So look at all the items that people have bought, calculate the price elasticity of demand for every SKU against every customer, and give me a promotion that's going to give me a 10% lift. Pick the SKUs by customer. Then for each customer, write an email. For that email, go out and get content from my suppliers' websites. Get the images. Get the marketing copy. Write the email. Set the prices. And have it out by tomorrow. I mean, you know, I've been a VP of marketing 4 times. That takes a whole team to do that, right? I mean, you need designers, and you need copywriters, and you need financial analysts, product data people. I mean, you can imagine a few years from now where you can do that with a really, really well-written prompt.
Wow. Yeah. Think about that they could do that. Can artificial intelligence ChatGPT actually now go out and look at a website?
I haven't tried that. I've uploaded PDFs and documents and drawings. So I had a couple of cancer scares in November. Both of them were negative. But in both of them, I got the diagnosis back and I didn't understand it. It showed up in my inbox, right? In my doctor. So in both cases, I copied and pasted and put it in ChatGPT and said, "Would you explain this to me in simpler language?" And it explained it and basically told me, "You don't have cancer. You don't have to worry about anything," which was great news. And I got it before I had to go see my doctor to get that news, right? But I brought those diagnoses that ChatGPT, those interpretations that ChatGPT had taken into my doctor, and he was blown away. He said, "These are so well written and they're exactly right." Well, and think about it. Who would you rather have look at your MRI? A doctor who's seen 500 of them, or a software system, an AI system that's seen 500,000 of them and knows the outcome for every one based on those images?
Yeah.
Who's going to, in the long run, who's going to do a better interpretation of an MRI? It's going to be the system.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. It, you know, It is kind of like semi scary, you know, and it's amazing because if the AI goes into the hospital arena, which they're doing anyway, I do know Epic Software, they have a partnership with, I think, Microsoft. Okay. And I know it's a tight one because the they had a 3-hour meeting presentation and the CEO of Microsoft was at the meeting because, I mean, they're really combining and they're trying to figure out doctors' documentation because they have so much trouble with the revenue cycle. Because you know what? You have insurance companies because they're all fighting for the same money between the insurance company and the hospital. Is the hospital getting paid or the insurance company going to deny it? Well, I think AI is going to level that field.
Yeah, it might. I mean, I don't know that much about that arena, but it's that what you're saying makes sense to me.
Yeah, well, what you're saying to me that you've seen even with your doctor's note and everything like that, it just makes sense. I mean, you know, it's going to be able to see, well, all these, you know, all this information, 500,000 pieces and put it all together. Well, you know, and if there's a denial, well, maybe you can't deny it because here's everything that goes on.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, there's going to be a lot of AI pitted against AI, you know. So, you know,
yeah, my AI says this, your AI says that. So,
yeah, I mean, all technology is morally benign, and then it becomes good or evil depending on how it's used, right? Yeah, so, right. I mean, you know, I mean, look at the cybersecurity in the age of AI. It's terrifying, right? So, imagine you're running an electrical distributor, and you get a call from a customer you've talked to 100 times before, and the caller says, "Hey, Jim, it's Bob over at ABC Electric. Can you send this stuff over to this job site? And it's $50,000 worth of material." Follows up with the confirming PO. You recognize the voice. You recognize the caller ID number. You recognize the email. And what happens? You ship the material over there, and it's stolen from the job site because the whole thing was counterfeit from the start. I mean, how do you fight that, right? You know, there's going to be a whole bunch of counterfeit orders placed at distributors because they take a lot of orders over the phone and they're trusting. And it's really easy now to duplicate somebody else's voice. And, you know, it's like these people that are, you know, calling parents to tell them, you know, posing as their parents' children, you know, saying, "Hey, I've been kidnapped. You got to bring $10,000 over, blah, blah, blah." Meanwhile, the kid's upstairs sleeping, you know? I mean, this counterfeiting in business and in our personal lives is, thanks to, you know, deep fakes, is terrifying.
Oh yeah. 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 And you're seeing it in the distribution network, right?
I don't know of any distributors have been ripped off yet. I'm sure there have been. I do know distributors who have been victimized by ransomware. So their whole operation, the whole business is shut down, you know, but deep fakes are a whole new type of threat. And I wrote a 3-part series on, sort of the good and bad of AI, and I address some of that stuff.
So before we end, I do want to know, so you wrote a lot of these papers and everything, and I understand, you know, it's in your business and they come there. Is it open to some of these things, open to people seeing them? Is there a site that they can see or go see any of this information in?
Yeah, thanks for asking. Go to distributionstrategy.com. All of our content is free. Some of it is gated for your name and contact information, which we sell to sponsors. You know, we disclose it right up front. That's why the content's free. We got to make a living somehow.
Right.
But we have really, really high quality sponsors. They're not like, you know, some of the retail marketers who annoy you endlessly. But it's all free. It's very high quality. We invest a lot in content. We don't do any advertorial. So, you know, if you see it on our site, you can be sure that we've vetted it pretty carefully. We really pride ourselves on content quality.
Okay. Excellent. So Ian, before we part, is there anything you'd like to say to our listeners?
I don't know. Let me know if we can help. I mean, you know, we, like I said, we really think distribution's the Ted Lasso of industries, right? It's got so many great people in it. And, you know, so we don't need to make a buck on every single thing that we do. We're happy to help if we can. What can I do for you, Jim?
Well, I tell you what, I'm going to go look at your site and I want to read some of those things and get back to you. I really do. Maybe we can maybe do help each other. So,
or yeah, maybe we can.
Yeah, probably you can help me more than I can help you, but we'll take a look. I am definitely going to check out your site. I think it was very interesting, and I know some people that's in the listening group that are definitely going to check out your site, and maybe they'll contact you. So, I think
I hope they'll come to our. Sorry, and I hope they'll come to our conference. It's in June. There's a banner at the top of the page. Applied AI for distributors.
And where is it?
Chicago.
Where, McCormick Place or something?
No, it's at the Chicago Marriott O'Hare, June 4th through 6th.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I live in Madison, so I might come and see it.
You should.
I mean, you're like an hour and a half, 2 hours away from me. So
we'd love to have you. It'd be fun to meet you in person. And thank you so much for giving me an opportunity to be on your show today.
All right. Thank you, Ian. Sounds great.
You bet.
All right. Take care.
Bye now.
I hope you found Ian's insight into AI as fascinating as I did. For more of his expertise, visit his website at distributionstrategygroup.com. Remember, we can all learn from our own experiences and those of others. If you have a story you'd like to share, please email me at jim@youarejustanumber.com. Until next time, have a great day. I hope you found Ian's insight into AI as fascinating as I did. For more of his expertise, visit his website at distributionstrategygroup.com. Remember, we can all learn from our own experiences and those of others. If you have a story you'd like to share, please email me at jim@youarejustanumber.com. Until next time, have a great day.